Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about Jeff Loeb's ever bad public enemas, Superman, Batman. Lots of pain
public
involved.
Enemies, Ben.
Lots of
say it
pain
right.
involved. Lots of stupid
Only because
writing.
You can open up your heart and love it for what it is.
Tripe. Anyway,
there's nothing wrong with tripe.
You of course know my co-host, JT from Saskatoon. And
I don't necessarily consider this an enema, folks, although it isn't that bad.
It isn't that good either, but let's get started with the solicitations as always. So there's a darn cook thing going on this week. It's splashed on the
front page of Comic List. Yeah, no, it's doing wraparound covers for certain issues of DC Comics this month or next month or two. But hey, it's Darwin Cook art. How can you not love it?
Well, speaking of art, you can't help but love. There is a Gold Digger swimsuit special number 22 from Antarctic Press.
I don't think even Marvel Comics had 22 swimsuit specials.
Well, they didn't know their audience.
Yeah. And the one thing you skipped over right at the top of the list there is from 12 Gauge Comics, Sherwood, Texas, number 4, which it's Robin Hood by way of Sons of Anarchy, kind of, sort of. And it's not as bad as that sounds. It's actually been a pretty, I'd say, faithful retelling of the Robin Hood legend, but set in modern day and in a township just off the Mexican border in Texas. It's been really entertaining. So
moving on, we got Archie 661. Getting Means, closer.
Yeah. This spring will be the season of the devil.
We have some Doctor Who from Big Finish Productions. We got several different things from Boom Studio, including Fairy Quest Outcast, number 1 of 2. Don't know anything about it. RoboCop, number 5. Is this classic? Or is this reboot? It looks like classic, so.
Yeah, as long as it's not the movie reboot, because, God, that sucked.
So we got, moving on, we got some Dark Horse here with some Avatar The Last Airbender, Volume 9. We have some Mass Effect comics. We got some Star Wars Dark Times Gallery Edition, hardcover edition. Usagi Yojimbo, number 4. Then we have some DC comics. Moving on, we have a Dynamite Entertainment, John Carter, Warlord of Mars, number 1. We have some new Vampirella, because there's so much wrong with the old one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, last week they released I forget what company it was in the early aughts had. They had the Vampirella license, and they did a comic called Vampy, which was essentially Vampirella set in a anime-inspired Blade Runner-esque future. And now they're going to republish that, plus new material.
Yes.
Welcome to comics.
That's loose. Absolutely, we got some
Solar and Turok.
Yes, we have some DC superhero chess figurines. Black
I
Adam.
I would love to collect that entire set.
Constantine as a white pawn. That seems a little off to me, but yeah.
We all got part of the plan.
We got some IDW with the Superman the Golden Age Sunday strips. People don't know Superman was a Sunday strip for a while. We got some Image Comics here with God Hates Astronauts number 3, which is rather funny.
Three more issues than was really needed. Got Little Depressed Boy is supposed to be there too.
Yes, we got some Marvel Comics here with this amazing Spider-Man number 9. Number nine.
Bueller.
I mean, I don't know how to feel about, I just don't feel anything really strongly for this whole Spider-Verse thing and how they're putting it together. It feels like a whole lot of build up, and then when they finally get to it, it'll be like, oh, hey, okay. That's what it feels like it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be as good as the build up.
Yeah, it's an interesting premise, and I've stuck with it so far, so I'm going to give it a little more time, but my hackles are raised because for some reason the words Clone Saga keep going through my mind when I think of the Spider-Verse story.
Yes.
Let's see what else we got here. Fantastic Four by Jonathan Hickman, his second omnibus collection. Wasn't he the guy that killed Johnny Storm only to bring him back like a year later?
Oh, that happens all the time.
Yeah, the death is but a revolving door. Time is but a window. Whoever died will be back.
We have some Titan comics here. Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor, number 4. We have some Valiant Entertainment with some death-defying Dr. Mirage, number 3 of 5. We talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
Oh. Not what you think it is.
You got and, some Viz Media here.
With some mangas. We got, and of course, JT's favorite, Xenoscope Entertainment.
Woo! Hollywood Zombie Apocalypse! Let's do this!
And so that was the solicitations this week. We were able to blast through in record time. So we'll just take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll have the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Atkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good grief.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at Decian.com. Decian.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back to talk about the Jeff Loeb, Ed McGuinness bowel movement that is known as Batman, Superman, Public Enemas. Let's first talk about what a Batman-Superman team-up means to me. It's in the 90s. One of the first comics I bought with my own money was a trade collection of this run of World's Finest. Carl Kessel was involved. Gibbons was involved. It was really well done. And the title of it was, again, World's Finest. Because... to me, I think that was, you know, that was like this clever entendre of what these two together were. The world's finest team up, you know? The world's greatest heroes together, you know? It's this title that that everyone who's ever done good stories with Batman, Superman, embraced that title. The three-parter crossover animated by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm, that title was World's Finest. As for mentioned, trade paperback, World's Finest, my favorite Superboy Robin team up written by Carl Kessel, World's Finest 3. It's this title that means, okay, you're in for something good because we're giving you a title that's not name of two characters. It's, you know, this is the world's finest team together, you know, and it makes you feel like this is going to be good. But Loeb is a simple man, and if he doesn't see names of characters in the title, he gets confused. So he convinced DC to change the title of Superman and Batman team ups to Superman Batman. And, you know, it's all downhill from there. And the art was done by Rocking the Dragon Ed McGuinness.
Which isn't a bad thing. I mean, he's certainly improved over the years, but this
is not Super Saiyan level 2.
Yeah, it's not. This is like Super Saiyan level 1. It's
no, it was like when they bulked up to fight Cell.
Maybe. Now I should say, for me when I'm coming into this, like I don't dig everything Jeff Loeb's done. I want that stated up front. I dug this particular storyline, this six issue story, for no other reason than the fact that this is like a love letter to the Silver Age. I mean, it's just, and here's the basic rundown of the story, folks. Lex Luthor is president, and there's a giant kryptonite meteor heading towards Earth. So, of course, it's Superman's fault. And Lex Luthor puts, like, a $1 billion bounty on his head, and there's, like, a bunch of superheroes working for the government because it's the right thing to do, and it shouldn't matter who the president is, and a buttload of villains come out of nowhere to try and cash in on the prize. We meet the new Toyman, who's and that's my favorite character, and we'll get a little more into this. We meet the new Toyman, who's, like, this genius inventor kid from Japan, and one of the most iconic images for me, like, that is pretty well emblematic of the Silver Age, is the composite Superman Batman.
It's just composite Superman.
Well, composite Superman, which is, you know, it's half Superman, literally split down the middle, half Superman, half Batman. I love stuff like that. Now, there is one, and we'll get into this in the story, there is one moment in particular that I agree with Ben that there's no way Batman should have been able to do this one thing. And my only argument is, and I will stand by this, is, well, it's Batman. If anybody would be able to do this, it'd be Batman. But no. It's Batman.
That doesn't work. Let's move on to, you know, the thing is this actually got the animation treatment, and Bruce Timm, when he animated it, actually, like, got this red felt marker and very visibly in the story made changes. Changes in the story where Loeb's story didn't make sense, and he forced it to make as much sense as he could with the material he had. Like, you know, in the comic, Lex Luthor says, well, it's a kryptonite asteroid. Obviously, it's Superman's fault, and people just believe him. While in the cartoon, they have this whole thing with Metallo posing as this decorated astronaut that they have grainy footage of Superman attacking this brave astronaut.
Well, he was working as he was part of the President Luthor's Secret Service detail, and he was looking for another chance. You know, look at my own colored history. Luthor says again. One thing we should point out is Superman, Batman, and Lex Luthor and Amanda Waller are all voiced by the proper people, which is, you know, Amanda Waller was voiced by CCH Pounder. Lex Luthor was deliciously played by Clancy Brown once again. And Superman, Batman were, you know, Tim Daly and Kevin Conroy, as well they should be. But, yeah, no, it's true. It's like they're this grainy, like, broken up and broken up just right, so you see all the things Superman does, and clearly Metallo didn't have a chance to fight back, and why would Superman must be being affected by the kryptonite, because they even have that line in the movie where what some of you may not know is that Superman, or the effect that kryptonite has on Superman, there is also a psychological component, and it flips his switch, and he becomes evil, and I know there's like it's like the people that watch this Colbert Report, and they don't get that he's doing this for laughs. Like, they think this is actually
news.
You know, like that. Yeah, I shouldn't say the Colbert Report. I think most people know that's a joke. It's people who watch Fox News thinking this is actual news. So there's like half the people are buying this codswallop that Luthor is shoveling, and everyone else is like, I don't think so.
But the thing is, to me, is, you know, this whole idea of of public opinion swayed against Superman is not a hard thing to do, but the way they did it was very amateurish at best. And
yeah,
so yeah, Superman and Batman on the lam, you know, trying to figure out how to clear Superman's name, and you have this ridiculous showdown fight. In the comics, you have Superman and Batman, they just shout at each other, castling.
Well, yeah, they're trying to get into this bunker where this information is, like, they're looking to clear their names, and they're put upon by Hawkman and Captain Marvel.
And so Superman shouts castling, the move from chess, throws Captain Marvel at Batman, and Batman drop kicks Captain Marvel hard enough to punt him into the side of a mountain and revert him back to Billy Batson. Bullshit.
No, like I said, if anyone could, it's Batman, but I do agree that is bullshit. But in the, at least, and this is the shiniest they got the turd in the movie, is Batman pulls a wrist-mounted missile launcher, puts it on his fist, fires it into Captain Marvel, which, logically speaking, and I know I'm talking about an animated comic book movie when I say that, and the irony is not lost on me, logically speaking, that would probably have enough power to send Captain Marvel flying into the side of a mountain. Whether or not it would actually be powerful enough to turn the world's mightiest mortal back into, you know, Cub reporter Billy Batson. I think when you read the comic or you see that in the movie, it's sure Captain Marvel went into the side of the mountain, probably not hard enough to revert back. He probably reverted back to lure in Batman. You know, it was a gamble. I still love the line because they don't mention it in the, they don't have the line in the movie, but when Superman goes off with Hawkman, he like flicks his wrist and like this magical Egyptian mecha gauntlet forms, and Hawkman punches Superman into the side of the mountain. Now, in the comic books, he says, "I just punched you with the entire planet because it's an nth metal gauntlet, and you use like all the gravitational force of
the Eye
planet."
Of Horus.
Yeah, the Eye of Horus. So it's a gauntlet made out of nth metal, and you know, he punches Superman out basically. And we go to this presidential bunker, which is like somewhere in the probably near NORAD in the Colorado Rockies.
Well, the thing is you have in the comic shifts, you have a coalition of both of their sidekicks teams coming in to try to take on the White House. You have Superboy and Supergirl, Sorel at that time. Don't ask, yeah. It's a long story.
Natasha Iron Steel, Superboy, Nightwing, Batgirl, Tim Drake, Robin.
And they all get stuck in the White House's defenses until all of a sudden you have Hawkman show up, but then he uses a lockpick. And wait, Hawkman doesn't use lockpicks? It's Batman. Off camera, he took Hawkman's clothes. And off camera, Superman did the same thing with Captain Marvel. Yeah. So they show up. They scare the piss out of Lex Luthor. They go, "Oh, it's over, Luthor. Ha, ha, ha." And Luthor decides the best way to handle this is take the radioactive isotope that nearly killed him once, gave him cancer, making a deal with the actual devil to get a new body, and injected himself full of this radioactive isotope again just so he could use it to power a Silver Age-style green
battlesuit. From like the DC Superpowers collection toys of the 80s, which, I'm not going to lie, when I first read that comic, I squeed a little bit because I've always loved that version of like the mad scientist Lex Luthor, not this guy who like, sure, he's like super smart and everything, but he gets away with all his bullshit because he's got like $1 billion in his pocket at all times. I loved it when he climbed into it. And McGinnis, to his credit, you know, he's hugely influenced by manga and anime. So this suit isn't just like this Iron Man like armor like he had back in the day. No, this thing is like half the size of a full grown Gundam. It's not just a radioactive isotope. He's literally liquefied kryptonite. He's created like the ultimate steroidal protein shake with liquid kryptonite
and venom.
And venom. And you see this in the movie where a couple of times he's like got like basically he's a junkie needing a fix. He's got like this like that epi gun that Batman used a lot in the animated series. He's just always got a gun of this stuff loaded in his desk drawer so he could shoot up. And at one point in the comic and in the movie, he is so whacked out of his gourd.
He makes out with Amanda Waller.
Yeah, with on this super junk that he willingly... I'm not saying that Amanda Waller doesn't deserve some loving. It's just the way McGinnis draws Amanda Waller, she's looks like she's halfway to becoming one of Jabba the Hutt's
like
wives.
She looks like the Wall.
Yeah, like the Wall, maybe as the Wall should. I mean,
no, she looks granted, like she looks like Pink Floyd's the Wall.
Yeah, so he jacks himself off in this stuff, and I love like the absolutely dumbfounded look that McGinnis's art depicts. Waller, she's like sitting there just
the thing is this is okay. Yes, Superman's fighting classic Silver Age Lex Luthor now, but we still have a kryptonite asteroid heading towards Earth. So, who else to fly it? Who else to save the day? Pilot the composite Superman robot,
which is awesome. You gotta admit that was pretty cool.
But hold on. Who else to pilot it? But Captain Atom, and all the way through flying to his death, he's not thinking about. You know, I'm not as good as Superman or Batman. I'll never be as popular as Superman, Batman. I can never be the heroes these two are. I'm just going to be piloting this ship to my doom, and they'll go on being great, and no one will remember me.
It's like, wow, he's got some self-esteem issues. I mean, you're making the ultimate sacrifice to save the whole of humanity. You just want to reach into the comic and just, you know, smack him upside the head. It's like, stop being a pussy.
Well, the thing is this, is at the end of the comic, they pretty much do forget about him and just have this whole, like, Silver Age style, everyone in the lounge laughing kind of ending. So it's like, he's actually right.
And see, this is long, 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 long story short. This is where the end of the Wildstorm universe
begins
with
Armageddon.
Well, yeah, because they had the Captain Atom Armageddon series that came out, I think, a year or so later, which a few issues down the line in Superman, Batman, you know, Captain Atom came back, but he couldn't remember exactly what's going on. And then you see the Armageddon miniseries where he ends up in the Wildstorm universe in the classic gold with red highlights style costume that he had, like basically the original, one of his original Charlton costume. Mm-hmm. Charlton Comics costume, and that he had a piece of the power from Void, who was a member of the Wildcats, and that caused like the universe to start breaking down, and it was basically they were trying to DC cosmic reboot Wildstorm in some respects. So I mean that's where that all started, but by and large, I mean they certainly was it Captain Atom almost sacrifices himself in the animated movie where after they have the scene where the supervillains try to jack up Superman and Batman, you know, the heroes come in and it was what Katana, Power Girl, Black Lightning, Starfire, Major Force, and Captain Atom. They're all on the president's team. And, you know, Power Girl gets taken away by Batman. They hook back up with, or by Superman, they hook back up with Batman. And they're like, she's the only one that's like not entirely certain. It's like, but it's the president, but it's Lex Luthor. And then, but
by the way,
she was drawn
terribly in the movie.
Yeah, voiced by Chloe Sullivan from Smallville, which still didn't really help because they tried to make her like this superheroic version of like a Cupid doll. Well, that's what she looked like with like the big googly anime eyes. But so they end up fighting the other heroes again, and Batman, proving that he is the superior fighter, uses words to basically get Major Force to admit that he took out Metallo. And then Power Girl, like basically Falcon punches Major Force so hard that Major Force is a villain who's got powers similar to Captain Atom. He's encased in a metallic
skin. Major
Force
is the guy who did the shopping for Kyle Rayner on that fateful day.
Oh, God, yeah. There's a cake in the fridge, Kyle. So his skin ruptures, and he's basically going to explode with the force of, like, five Hiroshimas. And Black Lightning, voiced by LeVar Burton, Geordi from Star Trek Next Gen, uses his electro powers to create a force field, and then Captain Atom absorbs the explosion and, like, almost dies.
Well, the thing is, Black Lightning was using his book powers because, you know, because he read a book, he could literally do anything.
Yeah. And what I was getting, like, I don't know, I was rambling there, but basically that sets up so Captain Atom doesn't sacrifice himself, and then when they go to Japan to Hiro, the new toy man, who I love the fact when they get there and I'm just going to wait here.
How do they pay him for that? How do they pay him for that service again?
God, I can't remember. Because I know Batman basically in the movie, he basically just straight up pays Toyman.
Oh, that's not what happens.
But he's like, hey. That's not
what happens.
What happened, Ben?
Well, Toyman wanted a date with Power Girl. And Superman's like, oh, we can't do that. But I have a lifelike robot.
Oh, God. I forgot about that. But they don't really mention that in the animated movie. I just love that they make mention that he's this... Well, of course they
did. That's creepy as fuck.
My point. But so I do love the line where they go to Japan and Power Girl's like, I'm going to wait over here. And they go further in. You see like these giant, like probably working replicas of like Japanese anime style, like classic robots. And he flies up. Hey, if you see Power Girl, tell her sorry about the X-ray specs thing. I was like, dude, you did what every guy in this world would do if they had X-ray specs. There is no shame in that.
Oh, my God.
But then we get, you know, Luther shows up in the mecha's armor. He's trying to destroy everything, and Batman decides that he'll pilot the robot. What's that?
The monstrosity.
Well, I still think it looks pretty cool. And I do like how, like, the composite... Batman Superman chest symbol turns into like the escape Batwing, you know, so I would hope that thing's got more shielding than the Fantastic Four rocket ship did, because he should have about 5 or 6 different flavors of tumors growing on him by the time he got back to Earth. I mean, it was a piece of kryptonite, let's say half the size of the moon. I'm pretty sure you caught a few rads there, Batman. But yeah, you know, so he gets back to Earth. Lex Luthor is arrested. Is like, God bless America. God bless me. And, you know, by this point, I just love how Clancy Brown loses his shit acting as Luthor in this movie. Like, he just literally loses his goddamn mind. And then they're sitting there, and it's the day is saved, and everyone's happy, and the sun is rising, and Superman's like, we should go for breakfast with Lois. And he turns around, Batman's gone. He's just like, oh, Bruce.
Overall, I think it's terrible. You know, there's nothing you can say or do that will make me say, this is a good comic, or this is a well-structured comic. The thing is this is just the prelude to many, many more and far worse stories that Loeb penned under the Superman-Batman title. And
he certainly never took this opportunity to try and kill the Ultimate Avengers. Oops.
Next arc.
Yeah. No, I'm going to say you finish and then I'll go.
Like I said, I just never was impressed by this title. And this first arc was dreadful. It was absolutely dreadful. The concept of doing something to finish off the President Luthor storyline, which was running many years at that point. That was, you know, that's a good idea to do something big to finish it off. But this was just not right for it, because that was a storyline that was going off with for so long that, you know, it was started by better writers. It was getting built up by better writers. And no one else was really doing anything with it. So it just felt like this really odd thing going on that no one knew what to do with. And, you know, so Loeb's like, I can finish it off. And the thing is, this isn't the massive, you know, summer crossover event kind of finish off that a multi-year storyline on the likes of President Luthor deserved the finish for. This is lame. Absolutely lame.
And that's your final word on it?
Well, I really don't have much else to say about it. The art was disappointing. The story was blah. The writing was consequential in the end. It just failed to impress me in every way possible.
Okay. I don't see, here's on the whole for me, I enjoyed this first arc as the series went on and eventually Loeb left. You know, it was hit or miss. There was a couple of, there's two or three issue storylines here and there that I picked up that I was entertained by. But like I said earlier, on the whole, this first storyline, I enjoyed it a lot. Like, the writing slipshod.
You know, you say hit or miss. You know, this guy has a, you know, Loeb has a worse hitting record than Bill Bergen.
All right. Well, just like saying, like the writing wasn't that. Yeah, the writing wasn't that great, and I'll say, admittedly, I enjoyed the art a lot more than I enjoyed the story because I've always been a big fan of, you know, comic artists who like are greatly influenced by anime and manga stylings, especially Ed McGuinness. It's just, I enjoy his art. It's got this right mix of like cartoony proportions and action, and you know, it's nice solid lines, it's not sketchy at all. Like, I it's like watching a comic, watching a cartoon on the page, you know, the story in and of itself, like,
animated.
Well, I'm just saying, on the whole, like the story itself I enjoyed because it, like I said, it evokes, there's elements of the Silver Age sort of bat poop insane stuff like this. I mean, you know, like I said, President Luthor there says there's a kryptonite comet heading to Earth and it's Superman's fault, and all these villains try to jack them up and these heroes try to jack them up, and then they're supposedly caught, and then the Superman and Batman families have to team up, and you know, by the end of it, the villain is taken down, the day is saved, and let's go have some ice cream and apple pie. I enjoy the story, but yeah, I will admit the story isn't that good. And the animated, like we've said before, like a couple of years ago at this point, we talked about this, I think, on an episode of Animation Aficionados.
Yes.
You know, in AA, but then it sounds like we got a drinking problem. That, yeah, like it's, you polish it, to quote a Jeff Dunham gag, and dear God, I feel sick having said that, you polish a turd, it's still a turd. And I don't deny that. I mean, the Bruce Timm, God bless him, did his level best to make this story made sense. I mean, the idea of why President Luthor would be impeached and arrested so quickly, they set that up in the film that America's having like the worst recession ever. And, you know, at the point where the first missiles they launch at this thing to, you know, blow it up don't actually work, and he's on TV, this was only an exploratory mission, I now have the proper, and then you zooms out of like Times Square or whatever in Metropolis, and everyone's losing their mind, and it's like, you know, burn the lifeboats and screw the women and children sort of mentality. He tried his best, and I mean, they fixed stuff that made, well, not made no sense, like the, you know, instead of Captain Atom sacrificing himself with a composite robot, it was Batman, and miraculously, he survived. Well, Lottie frickin' die. You know, Bruce Timm did his best, and it was certainly, I think, the best thing about that movie. That wasn't necessarily the translation of Ed McGuinness's art, which on some designs worked, Power Girls, it didn't. But having, you know, CCH Pounder and Clancy Brown, Tim Daly, and Kevin Conroy come back to voice these characters that they're like indelibly linked to, was the biggest thing for me. You know, after this, the only other, like, I've got all the DC animated movies on disc, but the only one after this that really got me excited was Justice League Doom, because they brought back the entire voice cast of Justice League to do that movie. And that's one of the big things about DC anime, is like they make that effort to try and get these iconic voices to come back one more time. Although now most of the animated movies are based on New 52 type characters, so Kevin Conroy is not coming back again.
Yes.
All in all, I enjoyed it, but I do recognize that it wasn't that good.
I did not enjoy it, and I recognize that it's not that good. So, like I said, I'm not a fan of Loeb. It'll take you a lot. You know, the thing is, it would take a lot of convincing for someone to talk me into reading a Loeb-penned book. And it's all about the So it's all about the execution. The story could be anything, but the execution is everything, and the execution was bad. That's all there. The execution was just bad. So, you know, that's the thing is, that's my feelings on this book. So this show's Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.